Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tetragon Financial Group third quarter results conference call. All lines will be in listen-only mode throughout the whole conference. If anyone should require assistance during this conference, please press star then zero on your telephone keypad. Just to remind you that this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to hand over to the chairperson, Mr. David Wichmann. Please begin your meeting, sir, and I shall be standing by.
As one of the principals of the investment manager of Tetragon, I'd like to welcome you to our investor call, which will focus on Q3 2008 results and provide an update on progress to date. The format of today's call will be similar to our previous investor calls. Phil Bland, our CFO, will present Tetragon's Q3 results, as well as report on our quarterly dividend announcement. I'll provide an overview on our portfolio and key performance metrics, and Jeff Herlin, also a principal of the investment manager, will provide a market outlook and discuss potential opportunities for Tetragon. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments, including statements regarding intentions, beliefs, and current expectations in regards to performance and the financial condition of Tetragon. Our performance may change materially as a result of various possible events or factors. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Phil.
Thanks very much, David, and welcome to everybody. As on previous quarterly calls, I'm going to focus my comments on the performance of the consolidated business, which covers Tetragon Financial Group Limited, or TFG, as I'll describe it during this call, which is our Euronext-listed company, but also Tetragon Financial Group Master Fund Limited, which is now 100% owned by TFG. In addition to outlining some comments on the performance, I'll also set out our continued dividend policy, as well as briefly outline some of the steps we've recently taken to help ensure the continued stability of TFG's financial position and the reduction of counterparty risks. So let me start with addressing performance. I'm pleased to be able to report again that in the third quarter of 2008, Tetragon's business continued to perform pretty well with strong cash flows underpinning stable income and earnings growth. Earnings per share increased quarter on quarter, growing from 36 cents in Q2 to 39 cents per share in Q3. Our top line consolidated investment income of $54.5 million was generated during the quarter, in addition to an unrealized gain on investments of $10 million, which reflected an increase in our weighted average IRRs at quarter end, and more on that later. This combined investment income and gain number of $64.5 million was pretty much in line with the $65 million in Q2, but represented an increase on Q1's total of $49 million. In determining the fair value of our deals in accordance with FAS 157, on a regular basis, we review and adjust as appropriate our IRR modeling assumptions. We factor in the impact of historic, current, and potential developments, both in the market and in our portfolio, on expected cash flows from our investments. And given the dramatic nature of recent events in the market, we decided it would be helpful for this particular quarterly update to provide some additional colour on certain of this month's assumption changes. The four main changes, which I'm going to describe now, have been adjusted for a two-year period commencing October 1st, and then we're making the assumption that those factors will revert to our original assumed levels after that period. Firstly, we've doubled our base case assumed constant annual default rates. Our actual default experience remains very low, which David will cover in more detail later in the call. Therefore, in at least the short term, this model assumption change should result in us building net loss reserves at a faster rate. Secondly, we've reduced assumed recovery rates to 90% of the prior base case assumption, which takes us to approximately 64% across the portfolio. Thirdly, largely influenced again by recent market experience, we've reduced assumed loan prepayment rates from 20% to 10%. Models assumed bond prepayment rates remain at zero. And fourthly, we've reduced the assumed reinvestment price to below par, again largely reflecting recent market experience, to a level that generates, for example, an effective spread over LIBOR of 450 basis points on US broadly syndicated loans. And you can read about these changes in more detail in our third quarter performance report, which was published earlier today on the TFG website. The net impact of the four changes I've just described was to reduce the weighted average IRRs across the portfolio by 13 basis points. The weighted average IRRs at quarter end, however, actually increased over the previous quarter from 16.6% to 16.9%. And this reflects, among other things, positive performance in the underlying deals, in particular through the ability of our collateral managers to protect and to build par. And it's also helped by the positive impact of an increase in projected near-term forward LIBOR. I'd like to turn to some comments on the operating expenses. These were actually slightly lower in Q3 than in Q2, helped by a continued reduction in repo interest expense, which offset some small increases in other operating expenses, which in turn have scaled broadly in line with net assets. Moving on to hedging costs, credit spread widening in the third quarter drove the $3.4 million gain in credit and FX hedging. And this compared to a loss of about $1.1 million in Q2. And David will provide further color on our hedging in the following section. Turning to incentive fees, the Q3 incentive fee of $10.3 million was calculated using a hurdle rate of 5.4354%. And the hurdle rate for Q4 has now been reset at 6.7979%, so again reflecting that increase in LIBOR that I've referred to early on. And this is in accordance with TFG's investment management agreement. Taking into account all the elements I've described above, consolidated net income after incentive fees increased by $3 million quarter on quarter to $48.8 million. This good performance was supported by continued strong cash flow generation, and the portfolio generated $77.7 million of cash during Q3, which gives us a cumulative year-to-date total of $269.4 million, or $2.14 per Master Fund share. At a consolidated net asset level, these continue to grow as a result of the retained earnings, and our net assets grew to $1.35 billion at the end of the quarter, which represents $10.69 per share, up from $10.44 per share at the end of Q2. So turning away from the statement of operations and net assets, I'd like to make a few comments on some recent measures we've taken in the light of the dramatic financial market volatility which we've witnessed during the last quarter. And these were taken in order to address, amongst other things, the continued financial stability of TFG through the reduction of counterparty risks. So firstly, we repaid all our repo borrowings and cleared down the repo margin account held at Lehman Brothers prior to that company's bankruptcy filing. Mindful of the pressure on other investment banks' prime broking businesses post the Lehman Brothers filing and the potential risks of having assets held by such institutions, we've transferred all our unfinanced securities, which represent the significant majority of our investments that we're holding, to a segregated custodial account with State Street Custodial Services in Ireland. We also moved a substantial majority of our unencumbered cash away from prime broking accounts. In addition, we've reduced financing and hedging counterparty exposures as appropriate and sought to limit those exposures to only necessary daily operating activities such as clearing services. And lastly, we've unwound certain credit hedges which crystallized the gain, but perhaps most importantly for this section, enabled us to move approximately $14.5 million in cash from the prime broking account to a bank with stronger credit profile. We believe that these steps help the company to successfully navigate the current environment and the recent upheaval, and we'll continue to focus on these matters on an ongoing basis. I'll now turn to the third quarter dividend announcement. In line with previous quarters, the Board of Directors considered, amongst other things, the performance of the company on a net income basis and the cash that's generated by the investment portfolio before concluding that they would approve a dividend payment of 15 cents per share with respect to Q3, constant and consistent with previous quarters. Going forward, we expect to continue to pay quarterly dividends based on the investment manager's recommendation in the previously described range of 30% to 50% per annum of net increase in net assets resulting from operations. Of course, we have to continue to balance the continuing need for cash to pay down or defease funding, to fund the running of the business, to make some additional investments, and if necessary, to support our existing deals against the requirements of dividend payments. Investors will continue to have the opportunity to receive their dividend either fully or partially in the form of TFG shares rather than cash through TFG's optional stock dividend program, and the conversion ratio will be published on the website on the 30th of October, and the election should be made in the usual way by the 7th of November. So in summary for my section, despite the dramatic events in the markets and the challenges experienced throughout the global financial system, the management team and board are pleased to have delivered stable results for the third quarter and for the first 9 months of 2008 in terms of income, net assets, cash flow and dividends. And with that, I'll pass to David to comment on TFG's portfolio and our risk profile.
Thanks, Phil. Our investment portfolio has remained consistent with 61 performing CLO investments, managed by 32 different collateral managers and representing a fair value of approximately $1.31 billion. No new CLO investments were made during the quarter as cash flow from investments was primarily used to pay down corporate-wide repo borrowings and lower overall leverage. The portfolio continues to be diversified across underlying asset classes and geographies, with approximately 62% of the risk capital invested in CLOs with primary exposure to U.S. broadly syndicated senior secured loans, 22% in CLOs with primary exposure to European broadly syndicated senior secured loans, and 16% in CLOs with primary exposure to U.S. middle market senior secured loans. On a look-through basis, Tetragon's exposure to senior secured leverage loans totals approximately $17 billion, underpinned by $1.31 billion of permanent equity capital. This equates to an approximate effective Tier 1 capital ratio of 7.7%, in line with commercial banks. Tetragon's exposure continues to be diversified across approximately 1,700 different corporate obligors, the substantial majority of which are U.S. names, with the balance being European names. Through the end of Q3 2008, 53 of our investments outperformed their originally modeled par loss levels, while 8 of our transactions have underperformed. These over-collateralization ratios and cushion stats are ones that we watch closely in assessing a transaction's health and expected return. Portfolio credit quality is also an important metric we focus on. Through September 30, 2008, the weighted average percentage of corporate obligors rated CCC or below in our 61 CLO investments was 4.9%, compared to an 8.1% weighted average maximum level permitted under the terms of our investments. The weighted average, or WARF, stood at approximately 2,490. Each of these statistics represents a weighted average summary across our portfolio, and any individual deal's metrics may vary from the portfolio average. Our CLO investments were cash generative during the quarter, returning $77.7 million of cash during the 3 months ending September 30, 2008. This compares with the first half 2008 average quarterly cash flow of $96 million. During the third quarter, we continue to strengthen our balance sheet and reduce company-wide leverage by repaying repo borrowings and holding cash reserves, which are currently earmarked to pay down or defease remaining corporate borrowings. As of quarter end, Tetragon has no corporate-wide leverage, with net borrowings having been eliminated. This means cash and amounts due from brokers now exceeds total borrowings. This is down from approximately 1.03 times leverage and $69 million of net borrowings at the end of Q2 2008. During the quarter, we were able to improve our financial position while maintaining returns. By principal amount, the lagging 12-month institutional loan default rate increased from 1.7% at the end of Q2 2008 to 1.91% as of September 30, 2008. This is according to S&P loan pricing data. This is up significantly from the 0.24% lagging default figure recorded at the end, at year-end 2007. By comparison, Tetragon's lagging 12-month corporate loan default rate ended the quarter at 1.47%. This is 23% below the market rate realized for the quarterly period. Our goal is to hopefully continue this market outperformance trend. Another measure we track closely is net loss reserves. Through Q3, our excess loss reserves increased, with approximately $158 million of these loss reserves having been factored into our IRR calculations at September 30th. At the end of 2007, excess loss reserves were approximately $106 million. These excess net loss reserves are CLO-specific, and the total figure of $158 million represents the aggregate sum of these reserves experienced across the underlying loan portfolios of each CLO. Our exposure to covenant light loans has remained steady at approximately 15.7%, while exposure to second lien loans is unchanged at approximately 6%. Market volatility and technical pressures have allowed us to monetize $3.4 million of hedge gains for the quarter on our hedges, as we were able to free up approximately $14.5 million of upfront cash postings. We continually look for opportunities to redeploy portfolio hedges. At present, no single bank exposure is above 85 basis points of total loan assets. I'll now turn the call over to Jeff, who will provide a market outlook.
Thanks, Dave. Several events during the third quarter influenced the senior secured bank loan market. From Lehman's bankruptcy filing to the unprecedented levels of global governmental support of financial institutions, the capital markets experienced heightened levels of volatility. Forced selling of bank loans continued through the third quarter, as we believe poorly structured short-term mark-to-market financed portfolios and hedge fund redemptions weighed upon market technicals. As a reminder, our CLO investments are financed with term, non-recourse, cash flow-based liabilities, and as such, our bank loan portfolios are better suited to weather the loan price volatility than many market value-based financing structures, which are facing material deleveraging pressures in this environment. The decline in willingness of financial institutions to lend resulted in a 67% decrease in global bank loan issuance to $207 billion for the first 9 months of 2008. Based on S&P reports. This puts loan volume closer to 2003 full-year levels, when the market produced issuance of $219 billion. Not surprising, pro-rata loan volume increased to 51% of total loan volume, up from 28% last year and the highest level observed since 2002, again based upon S&P reports. As corporations tapped revolving committed bank lines, one of the few available sources of liquidity in this environment. Per S&P, the LCD U.S. flow name composite price ended the quarter at 79.88, reflecting a yield of LIBOR plus 993 basis points. By contrast, the low price reached during the last credit cycle in 2002 was a price of 95, reflecting a yield of LIBOR plus 441 basis points. Fundamental concerns are no doubt adding to the recent price declines, as investors sift through a raft of forecasts predicting a significant pickup in future default rates. S&P forecasts the U.S. speculative grade bond default rate for the next 12 months to be 7.6% versus a peak of 12.5% reached in 2002. To be clear, this default rate refers to high-yield bonds as opposed to loans. Historically, the high-yield speculative-grade bond default rate has been materially above the equivalent speculative-grade loan default rate, a 56% differential in 2002, and both the high-yield bond and loan universe used to produce these forecasts include lower-rating asset categories that our CLO managers are generally precluded from buying. Thus, headline speculative-grade bond default forecasts have historically overstated default severity when compared to loans. So far this year, defaults have centered on smaller issuers. This is reflected in the S&P 12-month trailing U.S. default rate that show a 3.2% issuer-weighted default rate, while a 12-month trailing default rate on a principal weight basis was 1.91%. We have also seen some evidence that amendment activity has begun to pick up. Loans, many of which carry covenant protection, are often renegotiated to more favorable lender terms when covenants are breached. Thus far this year, according to S&P, 9.1% of U.S. speculative grade bank loan market has experienced renegotiated terms versus 4.4% last year, producing an average of 63 basis points in fees and 160 basis points in additional coupon spread. Most economic metrics point to a slowdown in global economies. It is therefore reasonable to assume that corporate default rates will continue to increase in the near term. How high can the bank loan default rates go? This is obviously a difficult question to answer in any environment, made increasingly difficult today given the level of uncertainty that surrounds the state of our financial institutions, consumer spending, and their effect on future economic growth rates. We can look toward history for some guidance. The last down credit cycle in 2001 and 2 produced the worst level of corporate defaults on record. U.S. high-yield speculative grade bond defaults peaked at 12.5% in 2002, as bank loan defaults peaked in the same year at 8% on an issuer-weighted basis. Since CLOs are not permitted to purchase some of the lower-rated assets measured in the above default numbers, the 8% default rate in 2002 generally overstates the amount of loan defaults that a typical CLO portfolio experienced in 2002. Another possible helpful historical view can be gleaned from Moody's data of the U.S. CLO market, which for the late 90s vintage CLO deals through the same 2002 credit cycle generally illustrates CLO annualized cumulative default rates to be below those of U.S. speculative grade loan defaults experienced across all speculative grade loan ratings. It's important to note that in 2002, the LCD flow name composite reflected a secondary loan yield of LIBOR plus 442 compared to today's same reading of LIBOR plus 993, potentially reflecting a higher level of future loan defaults than was experienced during the last credit cycle. It's also interesting to note that the last cycle's yield peak of LIBOR plus 442 coincided with the market's default peak, while today we stand at a loan yield that is 551 basis points higher than the last cycle peak, despite the fact that the 12-month trailing default rate is 1.91% on a principal weight basis. We believe that this disconnect may help to illustrate the high level of deleveraging being processed through the bank loan market and the high level of anxiety among investors given the uncertain path of economic activity. In terms of future investing activity, we continue to review a range of alternatives that may allow us to transact in this market at acceptable risk-adjusted returns. In some cases, leveraged loans and tranches of CLO transactions with stable credit characteristics are trading at what we believe to be attractive returns. We firmly believe that the near-term environment will remain volatile, whereby tight liquidity conditions and market dislocation will produce attractive risk-adjusted investment opportunities in the bank loan space. We feel Tetragon is well positioned to capture these opportunities. In closing, I'd like to mention that we continue to pursue the expansion of our investor base as we educate the marketplace on TFG. During the fourth quarter, we will be participating in the Bank of America's Credit Conference in late November, as well as FBR's Global Equity Conference in early December. As always, please do not hesitate to contact us with any questions. We look forward to speaking to you in the future. That will conclude our call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your participation today. This concludes today's conference, and you may now disconnect all your lines. Thank you.